We're back, Thursday edition, week one, episode two, Billy Lucci, Trevor Knight, Lucci Cast with Trevor Knight. Funny how that rolls off the tongue.
Got a great little roll off the tongue action there. I like that a lot.
We talked, Trevor, a ton of A&M football on Tuesday. Today we've got two special guests. We're going to go with Andy Staples, kind of around college football, something we're going to do every week is go hit a regional, national media member to kind of preview the weekend, talk about just the current landscape in college football. And then we're just going to have kind of fun with the second guest every week. This week it's Christian, one of your great friends and former teammates, and just somebody that could lend us a lot of insight as onto this current A&M team in terms of the personnel. A year ago at this time, you know, Christian Kirk is out there, you know, catching passes with them. So we'll do that. We've got Mike Evans we'll have on soon, Johnny Manziel. We're going to try to get Miles Garrett on and just kind of go through the whole gamut of the NFL guys. But also, you and I have talked. We've got a few surprises up our sleeves as well.
Yeah, I think we got a lot of guys that we can bring in and kind of a cool list put together. So it'll be a fun year.
Yeah, so let's start it off today. The format here is going to be you and I talk some around the SEC college football. We got the A&M stuff. We talked about that on Tuesday. We'll talk about it more with Staples and Christian with such a big game this week. But this past weekend, the weekend that was in college football and what's coming up, a couple other big games outside of College Station this weekend. But takeaways from the first weekend, boy, the SEC really flexed its muscle, did it not? I mean, I just thought as far as opening weekends go, man, the conference of record made a statement.
Yeah, I think SEC definitely held their own and even exceeded that a little bit. You know, I love what they do nowadays with these kickoff games and kind of some bigger matchups week one, because it tests some teams early on. And we had, you know, I don't know if this is necessarily a test, but you have Alabama playing Louisville, which isn't a pushover. Mm-hmm. And then you have Auburn playing Washington. That's two games right there that, you know, it test your muscles, so to speak.
Miami LSU.
So there's three right there just in the West that, yeah, you know, you're watching and you're thinking, well, how are these guys going to play this year? And so, you know, my take on is, yes, everybody else did what they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. A&M went out. They played the way they were supposed to play. I love the way they played, but yeah, they're playing Northwestern State. They need to win big. But you see a team in Auburn that goes in and beats a really good Washington team. I think that
was a
sets
good
a tone.
Washington team, wasn't it?
Definitely. And then, you know, Tua Tagovailoa's first real start. You know, he's got the reins. What's he going to do with it? Thought he played really, really well. So, you know, it's going to be an exciting year in the West and the SEC as a whole.
Quarterbacks in the SEC right now, that was something that jumped out to me. When you look around the league, I mean, here, Kellen Mond, a nice first start. He's one of the young guns. But when you look around the I think Felipe Franks you would call a young gun just because he's new in that Dan Mullen system. But, man, if anyone can get the most talent out of a dual-threat quarterback, it seems like it's Dan Mullen. But you go around the conference, there's so many of them. Who stands out to you? This is as loaded maybe as the league's been at quarterback since the Aggies have joined it. Which one or two guys stand out to you most?
I think the first one's a no-brainer, and that's Jared Stidham. You know, they put Will Grier as the best quarterback in the country, but the way Jared Stidham went into that program last year, took it over, they had a phenomenal year, and then to start it out with a big-time win against a great Washington team, like we said, I think he just solidifies himself as the best quarterback in this conference right now. Now, we'll see how that shapes out as we move along. But I was impressed with Kellen. You know, we talked about last week, you know, on the radio that he needed to go in there and solidify his spot. And he did that. And, again, anybody can talk about, oh, they played Northwestern State and it was playing a high school team. But he went in there. He didn't turn the ball over. He managed the team well. It was a little bit of a shaky start. But once they got going, he got some confidence. Yeah. And this week will be the big test. So that second one's pending. I think Jared Stidham has really solidified himself as a guy that can play well all year long.
And you mentioned Tua and you know, there's Lockett, Missouri. I can't get the taste out of my mouth of that Texas game, and maybe it's because they lost to the Longhorns. I mean, but you've got a special breed of contempt, I think, between being a Sooner and Aggie. Take me back, though, to Jarrett Stidham. How hard is it as a transfer to come into a locker room of a successful team? You know, Auburn had great success last year. It's not like A&M had not had a successful team before you came in. How hard is it to walk in at a position where, you know, you grew up where it's your team, you're the quarterback, that's your locker room, or that's your huddle, or whatever. It seems like that would be a really difficult thing, especially you did it in one season, maybe a little easier for a guy like Stidham who had to transfer in. I guess he didn't sit out, actually. I take that back because he went the JUCO route. But how hard is it to walk into a locker room like that and kind of figure out how to make that your team?
It is hard. It's one of those things that, you know, for me it was a little bit different because it was the 1 year. So it's finding that fine line of, hey, I got to solidify myself as a leader.
Yeah.
But I don't want to step on anybody's toes because they don't know me yet. I don't have their respect yet. So it's finding that respect while also solidifying yourself as a leader. And, you know, even though Jared Stidham had 2 years, he walked in there last year and he got it done. I would love to sit down and talk to him at some point and ask him, hey, what was your methodology? Because for me, mine was, I'm going to go work as hard as I can every single day, and that's how I was going to gain the respect. Yeah. And then the leadership side will come. But for him, I don't know what kind of worker he is. I don't know what kind of guy he is, really. I'm interested to see, what did he do to gain those guys over? And it may have just been playing good on the field. I don't know, but he did an incredible job.
Yeah, he did. I think Louisville, Miami, you know, Auburn had the toughest test. I don't think there was a quarterback in the SEC that had a tougher opening test than Jarrett Stidham did with that UW defense. Going around the country kind of rapid fire, what were some things that really stood out to you in week one? And I want your take on what's going on in two places. What's going on in Austin, Texas this week in the wake of losing that game to Maryland the way they did, to a team without a head coach, Trevor? To a team without a head coach and to a team that went 4-8 last year. The Horns are 0-7 in their last four home and homes. They're 0-7 in their last four home and homes with USC coming in. It could make it 0-8 in those. What's going on in Austin, and what's the vibe right now in Norman, Oklahoma? What can we expect from Kyler Murray this season? Because that's somebody that you're obviously really familiar with, not only the quarterback but also the program.
Definitely. I think, you know, you look at what the Horns have done the last couple of years. I mean, that's two season-opening losses to the same team. And it's a Maryland team that's doesn't really have anything to, you know, hang their hat on. You know, I get it. You're on the road. It's a long trip, but it's the season opener, and they just did not play good football. You know, they found a little bit of mojo here and there throughout the game, and then they have a rain delay, and I get those things, but Maryland had those things too.
Yeah.
And so you got to wonder, you know, is it the coaching issue, or is it a much bigger deal than the coaching issue? Is it a cultural issue in the whole athletic department? I don't know what is going on there, but, you know, growing up in the heartland of the Big 12, it's the University of Texas. You get great recruits. You're in a great city to recruit to. There's no reason why you shouldn't be competing, especially in the season opener. So, you know, that's still a huge question mark there. I think, you know, you can always point it at the head coach and the quarterback. And I'll do that. You know, Tom Herman was brought in to get this thing going. And
10-10.
That's games. Not what University of Texas needs. And then you put it on the quarterback too. And although I like both the guys that they have, I think they both can play really well. They're just not playing at the high enough level to get it done. So they got a big one here in a few weeks against USC, and they got to kind of figure out what they need to do. But in Norman, it's kind of a completely different story.
Yeah,
you graduate, you know, Mr. All-World Baker Mayfield wins the Heisman Trophy, and, you know, there could be those speculations of, oh, what are they going to do without him? But you got a guy that has $5 million in his pocket that's a freak of nature athletically.
Literally with house money.
And I think it is coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at Lincoln Riley and what he's done his couple years there in Norman, and he comes in as the O.C., completely changes
while you were
the
there,
culture.
Right?
What were
your first impressions of him?
Well, he's a
did
culture
you know
guy.
Right away? Did you say this guy, not as a head coach, but when he came in as the OC, were you like, Okay.
I've never played for him as a head coach. I think he does an incredible job, but he had wisdom beyond his years.
Really?
I think he's extremely intelligent when it comes to game planning and just the way that he is so methodical about his preparation. But he's got a presence about him for the young.
I think he's about your age.
I think he's still the youngest head coach in the FBS. But he's got that presence about him, and there's something about the way that he coaches that gets the most out of his players. And every single guy on that field, when I was there, and I'm sure it continues on, when you step over that line, he makes you believe you're going to put the ball in the end zone. And so, I mean, they had pieces in place. I think they've got one of the best offensive lines in the country right now.
Yeah.
They got a guy in Kyler Murray who's played ball before. He played ball here. You know, it's not a guy that's never seen the field.
Yeah.
And he's a competitor, a guy that went undefeated and won three state championships in high school. But seems like that's the type of place where they have the culture that next guy just steps up. And, you know, I think going back to kind of what's happening in Austin, they don't have that culture right now. They're all looking around trying to figure out who's going to be the leader, who's going to solidify this culture, and they just don't have it.
And you've played against normally what we're going to do here is we're going to bounce around real quickly each conference and kind of talk about the primary storyline coming out each weekend of that conference of that week, heading in whatever, if it's a big game. We've got two big guests this week that we're going to shorten this up in week one, but we're going to do that. We're going to hop around conferences. And then I think each week we'll do a little bit of a thing I'm going to call a knight's tale. And you're going to tell some kind of, you know, either it can be funny, it can be anything, some kind of story about your time, whether it was at Norman, whether it was here in Aggieland. And we'll just do a little quick something that fans will find interesting, whether it's funny, whether it's interesting. I want the full story of, you know, the touchdown run against Tennessee and the Arkansas game or UCLA overtime. But I also want to hear, what does it look like with Jonathan Allen flying through the air at you as a quarterback when you're in your drop? You know, I want to talk about it all, throwing a touchdown to your brother. We'll do that every week. But what we're going to do right now is just really – I'm going to ask you about a couple of games for this weekend, and then we're going to do something we're going to do every week, which is it's going to be our little social media tour
pertaining
around college football.
To the millennials of the world.
You're a millennial.
Yeah, I guess. Am I a millennial?
Are you going to double click and like, or are you going to unfollow or do any other number of things? But real quickly, you played against Kirby Smart defenses. I think he was at Bama in that Sugar Bowl, right? You played against Kirby Smart. You've played against Will Muschamp defense here at A&M. Those two are going at it this weekend in one of the other biggest games of the weekend outside of College Station, which we've talked about plenty already, and we're going to continue to talk about it, I'm sure, between now and Saturday night. But Georgia, South Carolina, how do you see that one going? And does South Carolina – everyone's giving them a shot to win this thing – but then I look at that point spread, and it's still over 10 points. I almost feel like, Trevor, people are kind of, maybe if you're Georgia, you might be able to play that they're not giving us any respect card. It's weird that so many people think South Carolina is going to spring this upset to me. This team was one incredible play away from winning a national title last year.
Right, and I think that is the point right there. I like South Carolina. I think they're a good program. I like what Muschamp's doing there.
Yeah.
Playing there, we came out with a win when I played.
That was a tough game.
But it was a tough game. Mm-hmm. So it is a difficult environment, and they're a difficult team to play against. But I don't think you can escape from the fact that Georgia has all the pieces to the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's not on the field, they have the experience of big games. A young freshman quarterback last year goes through the whole season, plays in the Rose Bowl, then plays in the national championship. You can't replicate that with whoever the starter is in South Carolina right now. You can't replicate those type of atmospheres. And so I think it will be a fun atmosphere. I think it could maybe stay close at the beginning, but I think Georgia's going to run away with it at the end just because of the experience that they have.
All right, around college football, we're both going to give ours just real quick, rapid fire. Who are you? Who are you liking this week? Who are you double-clicking? Who are you unfollowing? And then if there's anybody, who are you blocking and who are you reporting for spam? Who are you just flat out saying it's not even good enough to block this person? I'm actually going to turn them in to Instagram to get them kicked off the damn thing too. Who are you liking right now after week one? Could be player, could be coach, could be a program, a team, whatever you want. What are you liking this
week? I'm going to give the double tap, the like, the little, you know, little heart.
Yeah.
Fills up with the red. Oh,
yeah. Not the accidental one where you're I shouldn't have done that. Back in her pictures and I double clicked on it.
Right. Although that's a good tactic every once in a while. I'm going to give the double tap.
I'm going to take notes from you on this one.
I'm giving the double tap to LSU. You know, I thought that was a pretty big time matchup for week one, and they went in and played well with what I thought was a lot of question marks. You know, you replace your quarterback, you replace your big time running back. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of question marks. So I'm double tapping LSU. What about you?
I'm gonna go this week. My double tap actually is gonna go to Notre Dame. It's been a while since them and Michigan played. Notre Dame, all of a sudden you sit there and you look at that schedule. USC doesn't look dominant. They were in a pretty dogfight with a new quarterback with UNLV in the second half before pulling away. I watched Stanford. I still question the quarterback there a little bit in terms of them winning like championship level football. Notre Dame is going to be a factor, I think, in this playoff race. Getting past Michigan, and they really controlled that football game. I was impressed with their quarterback. I was impressed with the way he played in that game. It kind of surprised me. So I'll go Notre Dame. And that remnants of that Mike Elko defense, they held Michigan out of the end zone until the final minutes of that football game. And not only Michigan, but Michigan and Shea Patterson. So,
which I think Michigan's going to have a good year. I don't think they're a bad team.
No.
I think that, like you said, Notre Dame just did a good job. So, yeah, they get the double tap.
Who are you unfollowing?
Why don't you go first on this one? Because I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
I'm unfollowing Miami. I mean, the turnover chain, they need to go send that to a pawn shop somewhere on South Beach and get what they can for it. You can't they didn't get to use that thing once. And that's all we heard about the entire offseason. Thing is, Miami's lost four straight games. They've lost four straight. And three of them have been one-sided beatdowns. And the beatdowns have come at the hands of Clemson, Wisconsin, and LSU. All really good football teams, but we've been led the entire offseason and throughout last year to believe that Miami was in that group. They're not even close. You know, so Miami is getting the unfollow from me.
Mine's out on the West Coast. I'm going to go with UCLA.
Oh, wow.
You got a team with Chip Kelly, and everything that Chip Kelly has been praised for in his college career, it didn't show up on Saturday. It was, quite frankly, it was pretty pitiful to watch. Cincinnati. And it's the home opener.
Lose to an American. What is it, the conference? I forget the conference.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about the conference. That's how bad it was. It was a team that, you know, not necessarily had high hopes. They lose Josh Rosen. Mm-hmm. But a team that they need to compete better than they did. So I'm unfollowing UCLA.
You might unfollow them another week, too, because they're on their way to Norman
this
week. Absolutely.
They got a tough road ahead of them. And now,
boys are going to try to roll that score up, by the way.
And I think they will. I think they will. Absolutely. So here's where it'll get a little bit fun. Who are you blocking? I mean, this is just terrible.
Like, I'm tired of it.
It's got to stop. I don't want to look at your pictures anymore. Yeah. You're, quite frankly, getting on my nerves. You're sliding in my DMs too much, and I don't want anything to do with you. Who are you blocking?
Because that's fitting, everything you just said, I'm going to go Tom Herman and the Texas Longhorns. I would have put them on the report for spam list, like, hey, this is a fraudulent account. But it's so fitting. They're sliding into A&M's DMs. Hey, will you play me? You know, hey, come out and play. Then they're going public with it. You know, they're posting text messages between the two sides. You know, they're doing everything they can to try to bait A&M into a game. Listen, Texas, right now, you're like I said, you're 0-7. You have a chance if you lose SC to be 0-8 in four home-and-home series. They were to USC. Okay, no shame in that. They were to Maryland. They're to Cal, and the fourth one
was it Notre Dame?
No, heck no, it wasn't Notre Dame. It was somebody way worse than Notre Dame. It was Maryland, Cal, USC, and BYU.
Oh, goodness.
They're 0-7 with a chance to go 0-8. When you're the Texas athletic director and you schedule those home-and-homes, three of those four you thought were going to be 2-0. You thought you were going to be 7-1 in these eight games, split with USC, and win every other one of those ball games. That's why you scheduled them. Maryland, we're going to go to Washington. Our fans, you know, our fans are really, we're such power brokers nationally. We're going to go to the Capitol and let our fans go see D.C. and eat crab cakes and watch us beat up on Maryland. And then we'll get them into, you know, we'll get them into Austin in front of this quiet 100,000 people and beat up on them. You're 0-2. They didn't have a coach. Stop talking about wanting to play Texas A&M. If I'm Texas A&M and I need a home and home with somebody down the road, you know who I'm going after? I'm calling Oklahoma because they have that national respect. They haven't been irrelevant for 10 years now. Almost, it's 9 years. How old were you when Colt McCoy played Alabama in the national title game?
Jeez, I was 12 years old.
That's the last time they were relevant. Legitimately, deservedly, like earned relevancy. You were 12 years old. Think about that. But yet all we've heard this offseason is that they want to play A&M. If I'm A&M, I know they schedule these so far out, I deliberately schedule OU just to say, you know what, we do want to play a premier non-conference game against a Big 12 team.
I agree.
And just leave it at that.
I think that's the safe answer across the board of who you're blocking.
You're blocking them out. Too.
But I'm going to go just to change it up a little bit. I'm going to go a little bit differently, and I'm going to stay in kind of the social media realm because he is so prevalent on social media. I'm blocking. I'm getting Lane Kiffin out of here.
Oh, yeah.
I get it. You're on the road at a great Oklahoma team, but they did not produce anything. And he's supposed to be this high-profile guy. He's talking all over the place on social media, and they did not do a thing in Norman. No. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit harsh to block him and get rid of him, but I'm kind of sick and tired of hearing him on social media.
You're probably not the only one that's actually literally blocked Lane Kiffin. I mean, it's probably happened. I guarantee you Nick Saban, if he had social media, would have blocked Lane Kiffin.
I don't want to hear all that anymore.
Being fired him, isn't that the ultimate blocking?
Absolutely.
I guess he fired him before the bowl. He had taken that job. But now the big one, who are you reporting for spam? Who's just so fraudulent right now that, you know what, I'm turning you in because you don't even need to be on here?
You know, and this may be a little harsh too, and I'm not trying to attack these two guys, but it is the history over the past 9 years of the quarterback position at Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things that, like you said, you're no longer going to be a premier team that people are going to want to schedule. You get ranked every year, but that's because you're the University of Texas.
Yeah.
How long is it going to take until people figure out you're not a premier team anymore unless you make a change? And I really think it boils down to the quarterback position. And I'm a little biased because I played the position.
Yeah.
But if you got a leader at that position that's going to distribute the ball, he can win you a couple games.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they win a couple games here and there, but they're the University of Texas. I am blocking spam in that position.
Yeah, it's crazy how long a program – and you saw it happen for a long time at Miami. Michigan's dealt with it, and that's where my guy – I am reporting Jim Harbaugh as fraudulent. And I think they're going to be a really good team this year. But for all the – you're taking the team to Samoa or Tonga and, you're taking them to Rome, and you're bending all these rules however you can. You're having sleepovers with recruits, and you're in a rap video before last season. There's so much of this. Like, somewhere along the way, and I know he's always been weird and quirky, but I think somewhere along the way, Jim Harbaugh has lost part of what made him so great at Stanford and really so great with the 49ers as well. Something happened along the way, I think, that just kind of – and look – Jim Harbaugh, you're not in the same league as Urban Meyer with what he's done. That's despicable. I'm talking about just coaching football right now. And Jim Harbaugh is 8-8 in his last 16 games. That shocked me when I saw that. You're a 500 coach in your last season and a half at Michigan.
He's got all this
fluff
going around.
And you've got some pretty amazing defensive talent. a lot of fluff going on and not a whole lot of results or substance to show for it. I think I'm with you, though. I think he'll play his way off that list. We'll probably we probably won't be reporting him the rest of the year, but maybe so. I mean, he's off to a rough start.
I agree.
All right, we're going to talk to Andy Staples. We're going to talk to Christian Kirk, and we're going to preview another big weekend of college football, especially a particularly big weekend in College Station, Texas.
That's right.
Talk to you guys on the other side. All right, Trevor Knight, Billy Lucci, Lucci Cast. We're going to do this every week. We're going to take a kind of a tour around the country, a little college football wrap with a little focus on the SEC or anything else pertinent, and we're going to go get the experts from around the country, Trevor, the guys that broke down your play every week in Norman, in College Station. And we're starting it off with one of my closest friends in the profession, one of my first buddies that when A&M joined the SEC. I remember Andy and I comparing notes a long time ago before anyone thought the Aggies would be in that conference, I think. Andy Staples, kind enough to join us. Andy, you're our first media guest. You're going to precede Christian Kirk, who will end up being our first former player slash NFL guest. You're the first legit guest. And then
no. Christian's the first legitimate guest.
Okay, yeah, it's true.
I'm happy to be the warm-up guest.
That's true. Did you ever cover any Trevor's games, Andy?
I did. The double overtime against Tennessee was unbelievable. And I just remember how excited Trevor was running to midfield to do the overtime coin toss with Dobbs.
Oh my goodness! Unfortunately, I think I had my helmet off that day and probably didn't have the best look on my face. But I was excited about the opportunity. That was the longest game that I ever played in. I mean, it was just a marathon. But like you said, unbelievable game. I'm glad you got to cover it because those are the types you would want to cover it, I would imagine.
Oh, it unbelievable. It was great atmosphere. That was the first time I'd been to Kyle Field since they'd done all the renovations.
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing because when you look back on that game now, all I think of is the toll it took on both your teams afterward.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, you guys were just, the hitting down there that day was incredible. And to think that you did it for, was it two overtimes or three? I can't even remember how many overtimes it was, but it was intense.
Yep. Two Andy, overtimes and super hot outside still.
Is that the biggest,
yep,
guys?
Early October.
Is that the biggest difference? Both of you, this is for both of you guys. Trevor, you've played in the Big 12 and the SEC. I've watched A&M in the Big 12 in the SEC. Andy, you cover college football all over the country. Is that the biggest difference in the SEC than every other conference? Is just that weekly kind of war of attrition and that wear and tear that it takes on you?
You know, it is. Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other day, and where I don't really buy into the whole Big 12, SEC, he's better, she's better type of deal, I will confidently say that week in and week out in the SEC, especially the West, just the stature of guys, the physicality, it's unmatched. I mean, you go to a Mississippi State, and those guys look like NFL players, whereas, you know, in the Big 12, you go to Kansas, and you just don't see that every week. So, yeah, it definitely does make a difference.
Staples, what do you think? You're out there on the sidelines and in the press box all over the country every week. Is it noticeable the difference in physicality when you're standing there watching whoever, Alabama? I mean,
there's certain programs where the athletes are so good that when you get two of those together, it's so – like Alabama-LSU games – I'm constantly amazed when I go to those in person at just how hard guys are hitting. And like, it doesn't seem like they're trying to tackle people. It seems like they're trying to throw them through the center of the earth.
Yeah.
And even in other games that those teams play, it doesn't always look like that. It's just for some reason when those guys get, and then that's what it's like every snap in the NFL.
Yeah.
So that tells you how intense the NFL is.
Oh, exactly. And, Andy, this week, typically, to me, it's snap judgment week. You know, it's the week where we all overreact to everything, and whether it's – fan bases tend to always do that, but this is kind of one of those weeks where the media really gets involved as well in terms of trying to read so much into such a small. Is there anything though that you
like to call that guessing?
Yeah, exactly. It's what we do for a living, right? Yeah. Is there anything that you took out of this weekend, one or two around the country in college football, that you're convinced, hey, I don't care if it's 1 week, this is exactly how I'm going to feel 6-10 weeks from now too, because I'm that confident in it?
Well, I've been saying all along.
Besides that, Alabama's really, really good, by the way.
Yeah, not that one. that was too easy. I've been saying all along that LSU is way better than people were saying all offseason. I have a theory about why so many people thought LSU was going to be a disaster this year. And it's, you know, we write all these hot seat columns in the offseason.
Yeah.
And you got to put a coach from every conference in there. But here's the thing. There's nobody on the hot seat in the SEC.
Yeah, they're all new.
Everybody's too new.
So Edo got placed in that spot, basically.
Right. So yeah. Ed Orgeron gets thrown in there because, I mean, LSU does probably have the most unreasonable fan base in terms of expectations.
Yeah.
And he was an interim coach, so you can kind of, you know, you lop a little time off there in terms of what people are willing to forgive. But here's the thing. They were always going to be about the same or maybe even a little better than they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they won 9 games last year.
It's hard to believe, but they did.
They do get Georgia coming to them, which that's a very tough crossover game. But let's say they lost that and everything else was the same. And they're 8-4. Mm-hmm. They're not firing Ed Orgeron at 8-4.
No.
It's not going to happen. And so I think people just got in their heads that he was actually on the hot seat when he wasn't. And so to kind of retcon that worldview, you've got to think they're going to go like 4-8 because they would fire him if he did that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not going to happen. And so they come out against Miami. And Miami, you know, if you watch the last 3 games of Miami season, okay, the Pitt game, forgivable. This was a team that Miami had surpassed expectations.
Yeah.
They already clinched the division. They're looking ahead to the Clemson ACC championship game. Okay, so they lost to Pitt.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have, but Clemson shouldn't have lost to Syracuse either. So that's fine. Then they get smoked by Clemson in the ACC championship game. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those, oh, this is the difference between a team that has all these great athletes and has been there versus one that has some of those great athletes and has never been there. And then they go play Wisconsin. Wisconsin, one of the most consistent programs in college football. I mean, they deliver about the same performance every time. There's not a lot of up or down with them. You know what you're going to get from them. And it's interesting because they deliver their usual, you know, defensive performance where they don't give you anything. They're not going to make any mistakes. And then Alex Hornibrook, their quarterback, had the best game he's had all season. And so, but Wisconsin's talent level is probably not what LSU's is. Clemson's is better than LSU's, but LSU has some of the same kind of, you know, athletic profile as Clemson. So I'm like, you know what? I don't know how great Miami's going to match up with LSU.
Yeah.
Because I do know LSU's D-line will be deeper. It's supposed to be a little bit better on the O-line. Maybe Joe Burrow is an improvement at quarterback, or maybe not. Danny Etling wasn't bad.
No.
But so you get Burrow in there. And then I wasn't worried about them being able to find a running back. They've always got dudes there. And they were very optimistic, the people I talked to within the program, about their receivers. They felt like that was actually a fairly deep group, even if they didn't use them very effectively last year. So now I think you watch the game, they didn't use them effectively because they dropped the ball quite a bit.
But yeah, they did.
They're snagging some of those throws that Burrow's making. That's a really good team. And
what about without?
They found it in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's a crazy story. What about without Calavan Chasen, though? Coming off the edge, and Trevor, you know what it's like to face a guy that kind of looks like he can't be blocked even heading into a game. You practiced against Myles Garrett, never had to play against him, but what about that injury and losing him for the season? How much does that affect that Dave Aranda defense? Because he looked special, man. He looked special coming out of high school, but he looked like a future you know, top 10 NFL draft pick the other night.
Well, if this had happened last year, that would have been absolutely crippling for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little better equipped to deal with it this year, but it's still going to hurt a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. When you have a special pass rusher, then it changes the way offenses play you. It changes the way quarterbacks, when they're looking, and Trevor will say this better than I can, but when they're surveying the line of scrimmage, nobody huddles anymore. When they're doing their pre-snap stuff at the line of scrimmage, they're always looking for that guy. They're trying to figure out where he is, trying to figure out, you know, what angle he's coming from. So it's one more thing the quarterback has to think about every single time. And obviously whoever's assigned to block him is freaking out, because you don't want to be one-on-one with an athletic freak like that. You're thinking, oh, I hope they got a back here to chip him.
Yeah. Who in the SEC, Andy, just we're going to go jump around the country real quick before we let you go and before we talk Clemson A&M to wrap it up, but who in the SEC surprised? So LSU, you thought was being pretty underrated. So that didn't, their performance didn't really surprise you.
No,
who surprised you?
In the SEC,
yeah,
I don't know that I was really surprised by anybody. We haven't seen South Carolina play anybody yet.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, are they going to play somebody this week?
Oh yeah,
Florida played Charleston Southern, so you can't really tell much from that. Mississippi State was just warming up. They go to Kansas State this week, so we'll learn a little bit more about them. But that's part of the problem is the teams that were playing in the bigger games, they kind of did what we expect. Tennessee performed about the way we thought they would against West Virginia, which unfortunately for Tennessee was not very good. Vandy beat Middle Tennessee State by a little more than I thought they would.
Yeah.
But there really wasn't anything that just you went, wow, I didn't see that coming at all. I think the only result in the SEC that would have made somebody feel that way is if they bought the whole Ed Orgeron's on the hot seat thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what about the Washington-Auburn game? That was, like you said, one of the bigger games, and where it's not necessarily a surprise the way that Auburn played. They were the underdog in the game, if I remember correctly. And what is it about that game? What is it about that Auburn team that excites you or maybe even raises a red flag? I think Jared Stidham is up there with Will Greer as the best quarterback in the country. What about them is their weak spot, and what's their strong suit moving forward?
Their strong suit is their D-line. Those guys can get after you.
Where do they find them?
Russell, and I'm blanking on Five's name right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they are – I'm sorry, Five is Russell, and 95 is the name I'm blanking on. But they were so underrated last year. They were such a big part of Auburn's success, and just made them very tough to run against, and they could push the pocket when you threw against them. And then, they had Jeff Holland at that buck position. They've got Coe there now. I don't feel like there's been any drop-off there. They were all over Jake Browning. Jake Browning made some throws where you're just like, wow, how did he do that? Because there was almost always somebody in his face, and he was putting balls in places where only the receivers could catch him. But when you have a D-line like Auburn does, you're going to just wreck off. They're going to need very special quarterback play to be able to work out. What's interesting with Auburn is they were not particularly great on defense between the 20s. I think they gave up like 6.1 yards play in that game.
Yeah.
But they were unbelievable in the red zone. They just when they got in the red zone and the field shrunk, there was nothing Washington could do. So I like that. Trevor, I'm with you on Stidham. I think this point last year, that game would have been a nightmare for Stidham, only because he and Chip Lindsey, the offensive coordinator, hadn't really gotten to know one another yet. They didn't, they weren't on the same page. Now, you watch the way they mix things up. Before, Auburn needed to be running, between the tackles a lot, averaging about 5 yards a carry at tempo for the whole offense to work, because that run game would set up the pass game. Now, even if the run's not working, and Washington's defense is excellent.
They're really good.
The game is really hard to move out of there. And so I think I want to say that Auburn was averaging like 3.6 yards a carry in that game, which is way below what they would want. But because of Jarrett Stidham, they still kept things moving. You know, he got them out of some bad situations, or he's gotten to where he can move around in the pocket, find somebody in space. They can gain some yards, and then if you do have some time, he can throw a beautiful deep ball against Washington. That's awfully tough, just because they have such a good D line and such good corners. You're not going to get a lot of opportunities to do that. But I thought he played a great game, and I'm excited to see what they do going forward. I think they're talented enough to challenge the, you know, because we look at Alabama, we saw them play against Louisville. Look at what Tua gives them, a very different element to that offense than it's had before. It was the one thing it didn't have, and now basically they have everything. They have the best defense. They have everything they needed on offense. They always have the best punter. The one thing they can't seem to figure out is field goal kicking.
No.
Everything else they got. But you saw Auburn and you think, okay, with a D-line like theirs, maybe they can pressure Tua into some mistakes.
Or stop the running game and put a lot of the weight on his shoulders.
Exactly, which is, you know, that's what they did to Jalen Hurts last year, and that's how they won the game. So I think they're a really exciting team. But that said, you can see the possibility for them to have some hiccups along the way. They lost to LSU last year, which was a really kind of inexplicable second half collapse. This year they're at Auburn, so, you know, Jordan Hare's a really tough place to play. It's a different environment. They tend to play like a different team there. But that's a game where you could see LSU causing some problems. You could see making it hard to run. And then, you know, Stidham's got to beat him with his arm. And, you know, maybe he makes a mistake. Maybe gets picked off a couple of times. That's one where I think could be really interesting. But the flip side of that is I don't know that Joe Burrow has faced a pass rush like he's going to see from Auburn.
Speaking of possibilities, possibilities are endless this weekend in College Station as we're sitting here talking. You know, this is out on a Thursday here. Game day just 48 hours away or less until kickoff. How does A&M pull off this type of upset? Because it is not, for as good as Clemson's been, Andy, and I think they're clearly one of the whatever, you know, I think you might could put Auburn in there right now, but one of the 3-4 best teams in the country, if not the best, we'll see. But they've played a lot more close games, it feels like, over the last couple of years than, say, an Alabama has. Mm-hmm. They've got the Pitt loss. They've got the Syracuse loss. They've got the scares along the way. What does Texas A&M have to do, and what do they have to fend off to be able to make this, just say, to give themselves a shot in front of 100,000 at night in the fourth quarter of that football game?
This is going to sound weird, but one of the problems for Texas A&M is it is going to be in prime time in front of 100,000 people.
I know what you're getting
at. It's a big deal, and Clemson will treat it like a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
The way Clemson's been gotten before is they go to the Carrier Dome on a Friday night, or Pitt comes on a, you know, November Saturday afternoon, and they've just beaten Florida State, and they're just not that worried about it. And that's how they get beat. They don't tend to get beat when they're ready for it, when they know it's a big deal. You know, establishing the run is critical against them. As great as Christian Wilkins is, maybe the one – I don't even know if you'd call it a weakness. The one thing that's not super A-plus part of his game is, you know, if you run straight at him. You know, if you put him at the point of attack and you're, let's say, if you're zone blocking, you're comboing him to the backer, you can move him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of those things that they don't have a lot of weaknesses, but occasionally you can do that. So maybe they spring Travion Williams a little bit. And then really it's a case of how quickly can you go to the ball, because Cleveland Farrell and Austin Bryant are coming screaming off the edge when you drop back to throw. And Wilkins can get pressure from the inside too. So that's going to be big, is can Texas A&M get rid of the ball quickly? Will there be safety valves for Kellen Mond? You know, Travion Williams could be very important in that aspect too. Jay Sternberger is another one. I just love Jay Sternberger's story. So I'd like to see, you know, him blow up just so I could go write about the guy who went to Kansas and then was the third string tight end in his Oklahoma JUCO, and all of a sudden now he's one of the top targets at Texas A&M. So I think that's really interesting. But I also think against a defense like this, he's a guy who you may be able to spring open because maybe they're focusing on Osmond or some of the other guys. But maybe you have Jay Sternberger kind of hanging out in a soft spot in the zone.
Yeah.
Trayvon Williams just sort of, you know, maybe he blocks and then just floats out of the flat. That's the sort of thing that gives you a chance, because if you
and it's what Jimbo does,
quarterback and just sit back there all day and throw, it ain't gonna happen.
And that is what you described, though, are kind of staples of Jimbo Fisher's offenses. You know, even at Florida State, Trevor.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, as we moved into this weekend, do you think, and this could be a pretty easy answer, but I want to hear your thoughts on it, Andy. You think that because of all this hype around Clemson's defensive line and, you know, that our offensive line's got some young guys and got a little bit of experience, but everybody's saying, you know, they could get exposed. Do you think that is the critical matchup of the week, or is it going to be Kellen Mond, Trayvon Williams, the playmakers on the outside that are going to be the big matchup of the week and allow us to be successful? You know, or is it, you know, flip the script totally? Is it our defense that's going to be the game changer and the offenses are, you know, kind of obsolete? What are your thoughts? What's going to be the critical matchup of the weekend?
Well, there's two things that I think are pretty important. One is Texas A&M's offensive line against Clemson's D-line. And the thing about it that you have to understand about these, especially their four starters, they are about as grounded, level-headed as you'll find in future first-rounders.
Really?
They get that it ain't easy.
Yeah.
That every game, everybody's going to be giving them their absolute best shot. You know, it's amazing the kind of competitiveness they have kind of within each other. And then if you look at the guys that come in behind them, these are guys that start anywhere else in the country. That's one of the problems that I think a lot of offensive lines are going to run into trying to block Clemson this year is, you know, in a normal game, there's a drop-off from the ones to the twos when the twos rotate in. This isn't much of a drop-off. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be getting basically five-star talent every single play. Now, the other thing that is important is when Clemson has the ball, their quarterback situation. I mean, it's a mystery. Mm-hmm. So Dabo Swinney says he's going to play them both. My guess is that the guy who finishes this game for them is the guy. But I don't see them kind of going back and forth. And if they are going back and forth, it's because they're looking for something.
Yeah.
Probably not because it's working.
Yeah, if they're going back and forth, I think that's a sign that A&M is hanging around in that football game.
Yeah.
Andy, one more question before we let you go, and thanks so much for joining us. Just a quick one here on well, how do you see that one ending up Saturday night at Kyle Field? And then just give us your real quick, I know you're going to be talking about it the remainder of the week, on through the weekend, Georgia, South Carolina, keeping it local here in the SEC. Who do you have in that football game and why? I know a lot of people are saying if there's a highly ranked team that's going down this weekend, not as nearly as many people are circling number two Clemson as they are Georgia.
Well, I'll start in the East. I think Georgia goes in there and beats them.
Yeah.
As good as South Carolina is right now, and they're, you know, this is really going to be the unveiling of their new offense because they didn't need to do anything against Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
They didn't need to tip their hand. But the problem for South Carolina is Georgia's been thinking about this game pretty much all offseason.
Yeah.
You know, they as soon as they saw the schedule, they were like, okay, this is a potential problem. This is probably the biggest challenger in the East to us, and we got to go to their place in week two. So there's no chance they're surprised by the atmosphere or by the intensity of that game. There's no chance. They've been getting ready for it all offseason. So that's why I just don't think, you know, I remember in 2010 I covered a game where Alabama was ranked number one and went into South Carolina and lost. And South Carolina kind of snuck up on them. they can't sneak up on Georgia here. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I do think – now, I think it's going to be close because, one, Will Muschamp and Kirby Smart know each other very well. You look at last year in Athens, you were never worried about Georgia losing that game, but they kept it pretty close. So I do think it's probably within a within 7 to 10 points in the fourth quarter, but Georgia winds up winning it. Mm-hmm. As far as Clemson A&M, the one factor that I keep coming back to is Jimbo knows Clemson's personnel so well.
Mm-hmm. And Mike Elko.
Yeah, and has put together good game plans for them before. Yeah, you're exactly right. Mike Elko was in the division at Wake Forest. So, they understand the personnel really well. You look at last year at Florida State. That was not a good Florida State team. They were still in the game in Death Valley in the fourth quarter.
Yep, interception, 5 minutes left.
Probably better than that team was. So, yeah, I think there's a – I think this is not going to be a blowout, especially because, if Clemson's still –
searching,
messing around with the quarterback. I think there may be some hiccups there offensively for them. I don't think they just come out and torch Texas A&M's defense, but I do think at the end of the day they wind up wearing out Texas A&M's defense and probably end up winning 10 points or so.
All right. Well, appreciate it, Andy. Thanks for being on and enjoy week two of college football. We'll definitely have you on as the season progresses and as everything starts to really shake out. We did all that without even talking about the Big Ten, so we're getting ready to get Christian.
And their week was crazy. So,
hey, we went from one former college football legend in Andy Staples to another one in Christian Kirk. The only difference between y'all is Florida and Texas A&M.
Offensive lineman in the history of the SEC. You're welcome.
Hey, you were a Steve Spurrier offensive lineman, and don't you forget it.
Oh, I was a Bob Stoops offensive lineman because I was on the scout team.
Okay, even better. I didn't even know there were Bob Stoops. Well, then you and Trevor have that in common. Both played for Bob Stoops.
Yeah, he was a coordinator, so I belong to him.
All right, Andy. Well, we appreciate it, and keep up the great work. And we love following you here in College Station, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Take it easy, Andy. All right, Trevor, we got Christian Kirk up next, and let's get him on here in a second.
Let's do it.
Trevor, we are joined today by our first ever guest on the podcast. He's a friend of Tech Zags, very good friend slash former target of yours, both at A&M and in the NFL. Christian Kirk, getting ready for your first NFL regular season game anyway this weekend against the Redskins. Thanks for coming on, Christian, and take us through an off day, Christian Kirk, because I know this Tuesday, you're on Tuesday a couple days ago. That was not an off day for you.
No, it's obviously things are a little different than they were when I was at A&M. But typical off day, I allow myself to sleep in a little bit just because your body needs it. So it's always nice. I was talking with somebody else the other day. I mean, if you're a football player, you understand the feeling of being able to go to bed and not have to set an alarm, and that's like one of the best feelings. So, I let myself sleep in a little bit, get up, and I usually head up to the facility, get whatever I need to get done, cold tub, hot tub, and whatnot. And then Tuesday, I try to get some type of workout in, and I like doing Pilates, so I do a quick little Pilates class, and then get some more, rehab and recovery in, and then just enjoy, being at home and just relax and let my body just rest. I think that's the key day to off days, is just kind of being able to disconnect for a little bit and, recover your body, rejuvenate your body before you hit the week rolling.
Absolutely. Now, everybody knows that you've kind of become a little bit famous on social media for your chef skills. Is Tuesday the day that you're in front of the frying pan and
meal
and
prepping,
getting your meal preps going?
Well, Tuesday's the day I gotta go kind of restock the pantry, restock the fridge. So, gotta hit the grocery store. I'll probably hit the grocery store and then come up with my meal tonight. I'll make sure I'll post my meal tonight for you guys and give you guys a little shout out.
Fantastic. Looking forward to that.
Hey, Christian, how would you say your first NFL training camp? First run through the preseason gauntlet there. entering the season, how do you feel about how things went for you and the Cardinal offense?
I thought it went really well. I just know me personally. I took so many, bounds and strides from where I was when I even showed up for rookie minicamp into OTAs. I know, going through OTAs, just a little wide-eyed. And, every rookie goes through it. You got so many things going on, and you have a full new playbook going in that you're trying to learn. And then, every day I'm going out there and going against the best corner in the league. And, there's a lot of things, being thrown at you. And so going into the off-season program, headed into training camp, I was really able to settle down, master the offense, and then kind of hit the ground running. And, the whole thing about preseason was just, going out there playing fast, not thinking and just making plays. And I think from, the first game to the second game, and then, the third preseason game was my last game to play in. But, I just got more and more comfortable every time. And, I feel like I'm in a great spot, going into week one.
That's awesome, man. But, you've been a pro for a long time, and everybody talked about that when you were here at A&M. And I saw it firsthand, just the way that you prepare, that you were constantly getting extra work in the training room, getting extra work in the weight room, all those things. So the transition for somebody like you isn't going to be quite as hard. But let's transition here for a minute and go and talk a little bit about Texas A&M football. And what was it like this weekend for the first time in, obviously several years, that you were watching the Aggies on TV for the first time? What was that like?
It was weird. It was really weird. And I remember earlier this year, sitting down and watching the spring game and just, seeing those guys out there and just, not being out there with them for the first time, like you said, in a while. It was just, it was a different feeling. Obviously, you can't help but to not sit back and think of all the memories that, you had, in Kyle Field and at A&M and, knowing that feeling, that they're feeling, running out there on the field and making big plays. But, I was really happy to see, all those guys, like I said, making huge plays and coming up with a big first win week one.
You'll probably be in the team hotel, but you guys are a couple hours behind. How ready are you going to be to get done with that team meal so you can get in there and get to your room and tune in to A&M Clemson Saturday night? I guess, are y'all 2 hours behind right now? Arizona, y'all got that weird, sometimes it's one, sometimes it's two. Yeah, you're going to be a couple hours behind.
Yeah, it's 2 hours behind. Starts 5 o'clock out here. The game starts at 7 Eastern, so it'll be 5 o'clock here. Thankfully, I don't have to check into the hotel because it's a home game. I don't have to check into the hotel till around 7:30, so I'll be on my couch for the first couple hours, and then halftime I'll rush over to the hotel and then try to catch the back end of it. But, I'm more than ready to sit down and watch them, play in this big one.
What'd you see from Kellen and the offense in general? Such a different look, I think, than what you and Trevor both are used to. What'd you see about the offense? What'd you like about it on the last Thursday night in the opener?
Well, I was really impressed with how Kellen looked. Everybody and I had always said it, just with how calm he looks out there, and he's just well poised, especially in the pocket. And now you can just see him, going through his reads and being confident in his throws and delivering the ball, where it needs to be. And I like the diversity of the offense as a whole. I going through my social media and whatnot, some people, weren't too sure at first. With, just how, it's a lot slower than the offense that me and Trevor played in. They got to understand that's a no-huddle, high-tempo offense. And, you look at the offense that, Jimbo's running now, that's the closest thing, if not the same offense you're going to run in the NFL. And, that's how the offenses are nowadays. You huddle up, it's hard-nosed, under center, but, the ability to hit you for big explosive plays now, but I think that's going to help him out a lot with just being diverse.
And what do you think of seeing the 12th man there at fullback? I mean, hand in the dirt. We always gave him a hard time whenever he was on the defensive side of the ball, but what do you think of 12 back there with his hand in the dirt kind of being the catalyst for the new style of offense?
Oh, for sure. I like it. And I think I forget what game it was. It was actually Arkansas last year.
The kick return.
They pushed a little kick and he goes down there and returns it for 30 yards. And I'm pretty sure he showed me one time of his highlights in high school. You know, everybody likes to go back and, you know, brag about their high school highlights. But he was running the rock a little bit, and so I kind of, you know, I knew he had some athleticism in it. But, you know, I know he's happy back there. That's a nice little changeup to get, you know, one of your best players, you know, involved, you know, on one side of the ball.
Tell you, one of Kellen's only bad throws of the night came where he threw it at Gilly's shoestrings. He had blocking in front of him. That might have been a hell of a long run if that would have been on target. And Gilly, you know, he fell trying to catch that ball for, like, no gain. So far he's yet to produce a yard. But the play was there, guys. And judging from what they did in practice and stuff, I mean, he's going to get some handoffs. He's going to catch some passes this year. So you guys are going to be able to watch your boy run around against SEC defenses. And we'll see. He's going to get the chance to back up what y'all been hearing from him for the last 3-4 years.
I look forward to it. I think too. He's going to do a great job. But, Christian, moving forward, you know, obviously played Northwestern State. We did everything that we were supposed to do. You know, Kellen came out and played good. Travion did what he was supposed to do. The defense, at least the starters, pitched a shutout. We had a, you know, one score there late in the game. But moving into this next week, you know, Clemson, a perennial powerhouse, have been extremely successful over the last couple years. Coming into Kyle Field, what can you expect from Kellen, from Travion, from those leaders of the team, and what do they need to do to be successful this week?
Yeah, I think you know, the key, you know, for Kellen and Travion and, you know, Tyrell, you know, you look at all the leaders, you know, Cullen, you know, all those guys have been in those big time games. They know how to prepare for them. They know how to you know, what to expect. And I think, you know, just because, you know, this team is so young, they need to, you know, be not only vocal leaders, but, you know, lead by example as well on how to prep for this game. And I think the key is to not treat it, you know, any differently than, you know, how they prepared for Northwestern. And I think that's the key for the coaching staff as well, is to prepare for this game, you know, like any other game. You know, obviously there's going to be more sense of urgency to, you know, have great practices this week, but, you know, they got to go out there and play loose and play the same game that they know they can play. But I think the key, you know, playing Clemson is going to start up front. You know,
yeah,
everybody talks about Clemson's defensive line, and, you know, our offensive line is going to have to come to play, because if we can establish a run game early and get Travion going, you know, I think the rest of it will open up.
How much of that, guys? I've watched y'all play, and you've both played in some monster games in your careers here at A&M. It's felt like every year, I mean, like 4 of the 12 games are just these monstrously important top 10 type games. When you're playing, Christian, you referenced Clemson's D-line. Trevor and I have talked a lot about that this week. Is it about how important is it to kind of weather that storm? And even though you see them every year, for these linemen, is there some shock value at all? Did you guys ever feel that when you were playing Bama, like early in the game, where you have to take that first big punch or two and then kind of settle in and say, hey, we're here, let's go, let's get our feet under us and play some damn football?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know.
Go ahead, Christian.
Go ahead, Trevor.
You handle it.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, you know, you prep all week long for it, and, you know they have good players, and that's what good players do. They make plays. So you know they're going to make plays, you know, throughout the game. I mean, you can't just expect to go in there and just absolutely shut them down. And, you know, sometimes it happens early. But like you said, you just got to settle in. You know, we game plan for them. They game plan for us. So, you know, they might throw some looks at us that, you know, we might not have seen before. And, you know, that's why you go to the sideline, regroup, and, you know, you go attack it full speed ahead, and you know, that's when, you know, guys are able to settle down, and, you know, the plays start happening.
I'm just thinking of 2 years ago at Bama when you got that first drive was one of those ones where Trevor, you remember it.
I definitely remember that one.
Jonathan Allen flying through the air at you. First of all, I want to hear about that play. But then by halftime, you guys have the lead on the road in Tuscaloosa, and really gave them all they wanted through 3+ quarters. But with Kyle Field the way it's going to be this Saturday night, it might be Clemson. No one's mentioned this, but it might be Clemson that has to kind of weather an early storm. You know, they're coming in with the target. You guys have played all over the country, SEC and Trevor, you in a couple of leagues, and now in the NFL, Christian. Is there an environment that's going to be able to rival what we're going to see here Saturday night leading up to kickoff with College Game Day, number two Clemson, second game of the Jimbo Fisher era?
There's no way. Any NFL stadium I've ever been in, it doesn't compare. Even, you know, Clemson's played in the big-time games. Yeah. And, yeah, they've played in the national championship, but they haven't played in a place like Kyle Field. Christian, what do you think? I mean, I can't think of a place. I remember going to Tennessee when I was at Oklahoma for a double overtime victory, and that was the only thing that ever rivaled what Kyle Field produces week in and week out.
There's no way. You know, just the energy that you feel, you know, when you're in there, and even pulling up to the game. I mean, I always remember just, you know, right when we were about to go through, you know, the Spirit Walk, just seeing all the people, just feeling the energy. And just knowing, you know, how big of a game and how big of a arena you're about to step into is just, you know, there's nothing like it. And, you know, I know, you know, just even thinking back when we played Tennessee, I mean, that's the loudest, you know, that's the loudest moment I know I'll probably ever experience in my whole entire career. I mean, you know, nothing rivals that. So it's definitely going to be something new for them.
Hey, wide receivers in this game I think are going to play a monster role here because, you know, with the way Travion ran the ball in week one, with Jimbo's style, and Clemson, you know, with what they've got up front, I think they're going to really focus on if we can stop this team from running the football. Jay Sternberger is going to attract a lot of attention at that tight end spot. There are going to be, I think, opportunities for plays to be made down the field. But much like it was your senior year, Christian, there's not a lot coming back in the way of experience. Really, it's Jamon and a bunch of guys that have played very little football. A lot of talent played very little football. Who do you think we can see Saturday night stepping up, making a big play or two, changing the field position once or twice in a game that maybe it's not a shootout, maybe it's one of these defensive struggles where every big play is magnified that much more?
Yeah, I honestly don't think you can say anybody else but Jamon. You know, he knows it, and everybody else knows it, that he's going to have to step up and make those plays because, you know, I know Kellen, he's, you know, that's his guy. That's who he's going to look to, you know, if it's third and eight or third and five or we're in the red zone and we need a big play and it's one-on-one matchup, I mean, he's going to Jamon every time.
Yeah.
And Jamon's ready for that. You know, the way he works, the way he approaches, you know, I worked, you know, closer with him than anybody else. He's ready for it, and he knows he's going to have to step up and make these plays and, you know, win the one-on-one battles because, like you said, they're not going to let Travion beat them. They're going to do everything in their power to try to stop him, and so that's why we got to win the one-on-ones, the one-on-one battles outside, and, you know, Jamon's the guy to do that.
Get one more from Trevor, and we'll let you go. I know it's a big week for you, game a couple days away.
Yeah, so, you know, as we talked about position battles and everything like that, we haven't talked much about, and I know you're not a defensive guy, we're both offensive guys, but what does the defense need to do this week to make sure that we have those opportunities on offense, that we have the opportunity to win the game? Because everybody, like you said earlier, everybody talks about Clemson's defensive line, Clemson's this, Clemson's that on the defensive side of the ball. What does our defense need to do to make sure that we have an opportunity to be successful on Saturday?
Yeah, I think, you know, as it is in every game, but especially this one, is just limit the big plays. You know, we know they have weapons. They have a good quarterback, an experienced quarterback. And, you know, if we can just limit the big plays and, you know, keep them in third down and long, I think that's going to help us out a lot. And, you know, even if, you know, they're kicking field goals, that's a win for the defense.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, just being solid up front, you know, especially at the DB position, you know, which is one of our strengths, you know, just winning out there and, you know, just making sure we're doing, you know, all the things to, you know, limit those big plays, those explosive plays, because those, you know, those are the type of things that those offenses thrive off of. And, you know, we can keep them out of the end zone. You know, I think we'll be in a good position to win the game.
Christian, my prediction, by the way, you mentioned big plays in defense. I think Saturday night we see the return of big play Donovan Wilson. That when A&M missed him, you guys missed him so badly last year with that injury in the first game, and I think we start to see 2015 Dono with the big play. Someone's got to do it. Armani's gone. I think Donovan Wilson could have a big play or two in this game. I'll maybe get a pick off Kelly Bryant. Thanks so much for joining us, Christian. Tell Ricky we said hi, and we'll be watching you this Sunday for sure against the Redskins. I hope you don't do our boy DeShazer Everett too bad over there.
Appreciate you guys. I appreciate it.
All right, Christian. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Enjoy it, buddy.
Yep, take care.
All right, Christian Kirk, Trevor.
Fantastic.
One of your
guy.
Favorite all-time targets.
I mean, that guy, I mentioned it a little bit at the beginning, but he had a way of just getting guys around him
yeah.
believe that he was a pro. And, I mean, he made me a better player. Mm. Every single time I went in the training room or the weight room or whatever it was, that dude was in there getting extra work in. He's been a pro for a long time. He's going to go out and play unbelievable Sunday and have a really long career.
No question. And we just wrapped up week one of the LuchiCast. I had to look up there to make sure what we're calling it, LuchiCast with Trevor Knight.
That's it.
We changed the name when you get done with grad school, if you just decide to stick around. But, I mean, I feel like we're going to lose you somewhere at some point. So we'll just keep it for now.
I'm an Aguilan for now, so we'll
need
keep
to do like
the
LuchiCast with Trevor Knight with like a little cartoon heads at some point.
The emojis. Emojis. Everybody uses
some
those
emojis
nowadays.
On there. You're right. That's a good idea.
Absolutely.
Some lit. Just throw a few lit emojis all over that thing. We'll be back next week. We'll be reviewing Clemson, hopefully talking about a landscape-changing win, not only in this state, but in the SEC and around the country. If not, we'll be previewing Louisiana Monroe, and guess who's right around the corner?
Bama. Here we go. Let's
Clemson and Bama, 2 weeks apart. Great job. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday.